As usual, we are gathered here today to listen to another sermon of the Lord Buddha's Dhamma. It is because of the Lord Buddha that we have this Dhamma today. It is because of his infinite compassion, boundless knowledge, boundless wisdom, that we have the good fortune, that we have the privilege to find and seek for ourselves the path to liberation, the path to Nirvana. It is because he sacrificed himself and his life and many births in samsara that today we have this gift of Dhamma. So before we commence, let us take a moment to pay homage to the Lord Buddha and in our minds think for ourselves about the infinite great qualities that the Lord Buddha possessed. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Also, before we commence, let us take a moment to invite all the devas, brahmas, spirits and demons, as well as any beings who we may have come past in samsara, all those countless births that we spent in samsara, and all the countless number of beings who have been our fathers, mothers, brothers and sisters, teachers, uncles, aunts. Let us invite all of them. Today we have the gift of Dhamma, today we have the path to liberation. Let us open our minds, our hearts and this opportunity to them. May they all join us, may they rejoice in this meritorious deed, as well as be able to listen to the Lord Buddha's teaching and find the liberation for themselves. So as I make this invitation out to all the devas, brahmas, spirits, demons and the dead, please join me in extending that invitation out to anyone in your family, your ancestors, as well as any gods and brahmas who may be in your favor. Invite all of them, may they all listen to the Lord Buddha's teaching and be able to attain the noble attainments of Sotapanna, Sakurdagami, Anagami and Arihat.
Samanta chakkavalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam munirajasa sunantu saggamokkadam dhamma savana kalo ayam badhanta dhamma savana kalo ayam badhanta dhamma savana kalo ayam badhanta.
And finally, before we commence, let us all take a moment to reflect on the reality that despite the fact that today we have the Lord Buddha's teaching which has shown us right from wrong, in the countless births in samsara, we have not had this opportunity. And oftentimes we have only had the opportunity or only had the association, unfortunately, of the Asat Purushas, who are the ignoble people, the immoral people. And in having done so, they defiled our minds with raga, dvesha, moha. And having been blinded with ignorance and attachment, we may have insulted, abused, slandered the Aryas. These Aryas are the Samma Sambuddhas, the Pacheka Buddhas, the Arahatta Buddhas, as well as Anagamis, Sakurdagamis and Sotapannas, be they on the path or having attained the fruits. We may have also insulted the Sambuddha Shasani, the ministry of the Lord Buddha, and in having done so either knowingly or unknowingly, The demerit that we would have acquired today hinders our progress, hinders our attaining of the noble attainments. So let us all take a moment to seek forgiveness from those Aryas. May those Aryas forgive us, may they have the compassion in their hearts to forgive us, which they most certainly do. And any aryupavada that we might have done, any slander, any abuse that we may have directed towards them, be forgiven, in the hope that today, through the course of this sermon, may we all be able to attain the noble achievements of Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami and Arihat. Okay. Can you check? Let's drop a message on Skype and see if they can hear us. Okay. Got a question here. Who is Mara? Marya. Is it our Raga, Dvesha, Moha? That's a great question. Because we're at battle. We're at war. And what to do when you get too much stress? You feel stress at your age? Good heavens. Wait till you get to mine. Okay. So two excellent questions. Thank you. They've taken the courage to raise the question, and I'm sure you all have this question in your minds, lingering somewhere. How do we tackle these problems? We're at battle, we're at war, so we need to get to know our enemy. The more you know, the more you learn about your enemy, the more prepared you can be. Because otherwise you don't know what weapons to take to war. You don't know what they might have in their possession. You need to learn the tricks that your enemy might use to combat, or use at combat. So let's find out who Mara is. Before I come to those questions though, I want to... I would like you all to understand something. See, when I generally ask the question, who would like to attain Nibbana? Usually, I mean, if I ask that question now, if I threw that question now to the audience right now, I'm sure I'll get a few responses. There'll be a few hands going up. Every now and then, there are also a few hands which are a bit hesitant. They don't always go up. And that's fair enough, because not everyone understands what Nibbana is. For instance, if we were to ask someone that was a non-Buddhist, you know, if you asked someone who was a Muslim or a Christian, or a Hindu, would you like to attain Nibbana? Chances are the response you're going to get is a blank face. You know, that's a very Buddhist concept. I don't believe in Buddhism. The creator or my God or whoever I believe in does not talk about Nibbana. He talks about life in heaven where there is endless happiness. And that is what they believe in. So, what I've been thinking is, why don't we all stop talking about Nibbana for once? Let's not talk about Nibbana. If I asked you again the question, who would like to be an Arahant? I think the answers I'd get would be the same as if I were to ask you, who would like to attain Nibbana? You know, again, it would require you to understand who an Arahant is. And one might think, well, to be an Arahant, perhaps you need to ordain. I'm only a lay person. I have responsibilities. I have family I need to take care of. I have kids I need to take to school. I have a family that I need to feed. You talk about Nibbana, you talk about being an Arahant, but you know, this does not apply to me. I mean, let's talk practically. And again, they're all very valid comments because you're talking about what it is, what's real to you, right? Yes, I could come and sit here and say, you know, let's all go become monks and nuns, but that's not very practical. Certainly not in your cases. I mean, yes, if you can do that, by all means, you know, you usually just get one chance in once every trillion births, you get one chance to become a monk or a nun. And if this is the chance, then make use of it. But reality is that's not an opportunity or an avenue that's open to all of you. So let's put Nibbana to a side. Let's put becoming an Arahant to a side. Let me propose to you this. Are you all ready to see the truth? Do you all want to know the truth? Forget Nibbana. Would you all like to understand the truth? What is real? How about we just talk about what the truth is? How about we just talk about what reality is? Put Nibbana to a side. Is that a fair suggestion? Because then, if I asked you, who here would like to know the truth? Each and every one of you will put your arms up. Be that a Christian or a Muslim or a Hindu, then religion becomes just another, you know, it doesn't play a picture in that question. So in fact, you know, when you come along to these sermons and you learn a thing or two and you think, actually, you know what, I've learned something and I want to share that with my friends, and some your friends may not always be Buddhists, then approaching the topic of Nibbana, approaching the topic of the Buddha, approaching the topic of becoming an Arahant or even a Sotapanna can be quite challenging and tricky, right? Because sometimes, I know some religions, they prohibit making references to anything that does not relate to their religion. They prohibit their followers from even listening to a sermon delivered by someone that is not of their faith. So how do you approach speaking about what we talk about with your friends and people who are not of Buddhist faith? So the answer to that question, I think, is then let's talk about the truth. What is the truth? And the truth must be something that is real and that is true for all of you. Because there can't be a subjective truth. Truth can always be, must always be objective. It doesn't matter whether you're black or white, whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're tall or short. It doesn't matter whether you're thin or fat, whether you're English or you're French. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter, because the truth is the truth. So let's talk about the truth. So here's a question. What is the truth? And come to think of it, you know, when the Buddha was only a bodhisattva, do you think he knew what Nibbana was? No. He did not know what Nibbana was. He went looking for it just because he didn't know what it was. You know, he didn't know the first noble truth, he didn't know the second noble truth, he didn't know the third noble truth, he didn't know the fourth noble truth. So if you don't know the four noble truths, then what do you know about Nibbana? Nothing. So he didn't know about Nibbana. But there was a quest on which he was on. The quest he was on was, I am in search of the truth, King Satchagavesi. I am in search of how to put out the fires that ignite in me, King Kusalagavesi. So, if you are all prepared then to go looking for the truth, just as much as the Bodhisattva was, aren't you all Bodhisattvas? Well, isn't that great? You're all Bodhisattvas. If you're all prepared to see the truth, if you're all prepared to listen to something, a preaching or read a book or whatever that medium of transmission is, the communication is, and then analyze it, see how that applies to yourself with the intention of finding out the truth, then you're all Bodhisattvas. It then doesn't matter whether you're tall or short, whether you're black or white, whether you're a man or a woman,
whether you're a Muslim or a Christian or a Hindu, it really doesn't matter, because we're all looking for the truth. So let's go looking for the truth. There are two doors. There's one door we've opened and there's a path in front of us. And that's the path we've traveled for a long period of time in our lives. On this door it says truth within inverted commas. There's another door, and there's a label on this door, and that just has the word truth. No inverted commas. You know how when you kid around with your friends, you go, you know, the truth. When you know you're not referring to the truth, it's just, you know, what is relevant in the context. So what we've been doing, ladies and gentlemen, all this time is going down this door or this avenue which opened to us, which revealed to us as soon as we opened this door, and on that was the word truth, but within inverted commas. So we have traveled this path with no other intention other than, with no intention other than trying to find happiness. Yes, I keep coming back to happiness because that's all I'm interested in, and I hope that's all you're interested in. If I asked you a very simple question, who here is in pursuit of sorrow? Who here is looking for unhappiness and suffering in life? I'm sure none of you is going to put your arms up. But if I ask you who here whose quest in life is to find happiness, then I'm sure every one of you will put your arms up. And like I say, I know the reason you come to listen to these sermons is because you're still looking for the path, for the formula to be happy. Once you're fully happy, once you're fully satisfied with life, then your quest for the pursuit of happiness ends there. You no longer need to go looking for happiness because you found it. This is why an arahant doesn't go looking for happiness. This is why the Buddha doesn't go looking for happiness, because he's already found it. So we are still navigating ourselves, maneuvering here and there, trying to find this happiness. And what matters here is which path do you pick? So we've already picked one path in life and we've been going down this road. Now, in order to find happiness, is it true that if I were to say that happiness is to be found when you acquire things, when you bring things to you, when you get to build things, make things, and, you know, build wealth, acquire, build houses, and, you know, the things that make you happy, you want more of them, right? That's how people generally find happiness. That's what generally people do to be happy. You go looking for the things that you like. When was the last time you cried because you lost something that you really didn't like? Did that ever happen? You lost something and you really didn't like it. You found yourself crying? Did that ever happen? No, that never happens. You found yourself crying, you found yourself weeping when you lost something or someone that you really, really liked, that you really desired the association of, or having the possession of. So if I were to say, and I want you to give me an answer, if I were to say, to be happy in your lives, you've got to find things that you like. To be happy in your life, you have to be able to associate with people that you like. Is that a fair comment? Anyone here disagree with that? No. Good. So you're all looking for things that you like, and therefore when you get them, that makes you happy. This is why you've done all the things you've done up until this point. You went to school so you could get a good education. You then went and found yourselves a job. You had kids. Why? Because you liked kids, right? Who here had kids because you really didn't like kids? Who here went and built a house because I really don't like living in a house? Who here went on holiday to Malaysia because they really didn't like Malaysia? No, that doesn't happen. Who here orders pizza because they really don't like pizza? No, that doesn't happen. You find happiness in accumulating, building, gathering the things that you like. So this liking or desire is something that you really must have with you to be happy. Correct? Where does desire exist? Does it exist in the thing that you bring towards you, or does that exist within you? Why does one guy like pizza and the other guy doesn't like pizza? I mean, if liking or desire existed in the pizza, or even if happiness exists in the pizza, then everyone should be able to have pizza and be happy. I know my grandmother despises pizza. That's the last thing you could feed her. Over my dead body, she says. Well, soon enough she'll be there. So happiness does not exist outside. Happiness exists inside, and that happiness is the result of being able to acquire, being able to gather, being able to achieve something that you like. Liking is desire, desire is attachment. Correct? All with me so far? Okay. So, let's summarize what we've been talking about for the last few minutes. Attachment brings happiness. Well, that's how you've been looking for happiness all your life. Don't nod your head now. I mean, if I'm giving you fobs, if I'm giving you lies, if I'm just throwing out my own mental creations, then tell me so. But I'm talking about the way you live your life, because how do I know this? How do you think I know about your life? Yes, because I live that life. We've all lived in this world. We're all brothers and sisters. We've all done the same things. We've all followed that path. We all opened the same door. So to find happiness, we've had to attach ourselves to things. Whether that's people or things, objects. Or it could even be non-physical things. Like, one could be attached to love. Love's not a physical thing. You like the person that you love. I mean, that's the person, but then love itself is not physical. So what you're attached to can either be physical or non-physical, or material or non-material, and it could also be a thing or a person, right? All with me so far? But in either case, again, let's go back to the simple formula that we all agreed upon, and that is attachment brings us happiness. Well, what did the Buddha say? Attachment brings you suffering. So either the Buddha got it wrong or we got it wrong. Well, both those statements cannot be true at the same time. If one's true, then the other's false. Well, then we've got to question who got it wrong. Did the Buddha get it wrong? Well, who knows? What if? I mean, there's what? How many of you here? About 30, 40 odd you? Okay. So there's all of us saying that attachment brings us happiness, and then there's one man saying attachment brings you suffering. Surely if we took a consensus, then we've beaten the Buddha 40-1. So we've got to question this. We've got to analyze this. Why? Because we are going to go looking for the truth. Not because we want to attain Nibbana, like I said, put that to aside. Not because we want to all become arahants, put that to aside. Let's go looking for the truth. What did attachment really bring us? Well, let's look for it. When you attach yourself to something, what do you want to do? You want to make it yours, don't you? Whether that's food, whether that's a building, whether that's a car, whether that's a toy, whether that's a person. Once you're attached to yourself, once you've attached yourself to something, you want to make it yours. Or it could be just a song that you hear. So you're in your car, you're tuned into Gold FM, you hear a music. What's the first thing you do when you get back home? You go online, you download that track, and now it's yours. So when you like the look of something, when you like the sound of something, you want to make it yours. And that would be true for all of you. It would be true for me as well. Whatever we like, we want to make it ours. Now, let me give you an example. I know women like shopping. Well, at least most of you do. When you walk down the street and you see a shop and there are mannequins that are dressed in whatever, a frock, let's say, or a skirt or some kind of dress, you're walking past it and you see this dress on a mannequin. Now you want it. That moment at which desire arises in your heart, in your mind, from that point to the point at which you have acquired this object that you like, that duration of time, how do you feel? Do you feel happy? What about the feeling of, is the feeling of anticipation, the feeling of wanting, the feeling of how do I make this mine? The feeling of that nervousness. Okay, let's take another example. You've done your exams, you're waiting for the results. Now everyone wants to pass an exam, that's why you sit the exam. So from the point you sat the exam to the point where you're waiting for your results, how do you feel? Do you not feel uneasy? You know, they say, okay, today is when you're going to get your results. Do you all remember when you used to go online and check your results? I remember when I was doing my O-levels. I go on the website and I keep refreshing the page to see if they've released the results. Or say perhaps, you know, you're at work and you're tuned into the cricket match. Sri Lanka's playing. It's the final over. Now you all have something that you desire. You want Sri Lanka to win. Well, whichever country you're interested in, you're a fan of, you want that country to win. Now you're at work, so you need to type your emails. But every so often you're going to go refresh that page. If it's Crick Info, you keep hitting refresh. What's the result? Who's won? Is it the last ball? Who's batting? What's the result? Do you feel quite happy, or is that a feeling of tension? Yes, indeed. A feeling of uneasiness, right? Is that a positive feeling or a negative feeling? Would you not like to live your entire... I mean, if I were to propose to you, let's all live our entire life feeling that way. Feeling unease, feeling tension. Who here is prepared to do that? No one's prepared to do that. Because the moment you get your results, that's the moment you're relieved of the stress. So we had that question. What do you do when you feel stress? Well, you relieve yourself of stress. What else do you do? What to do when you get too much stress? What do? You relieve yourself of stress. Isn't that why we do the things that we do most of the time? You know, let's say dad says, hey, son, today's pizza night. It's only 5 o'clock. Dinner's at 8. The next 3 hours. Aren't they the longest 3 hours of your life? Is it 8 yet? Dad, would you like me to go online, get the page ready so you can just come and enter your card details and hit order? I'll get all that done, prepared for you. I know you're laughing. Well, this is how we need to look at the truth. I mean, you know, what's true is what's true for our lives, in our lives. What's true for us? That's what the truth is. It's not what's true for somebody else. What's true is what's true for us. Here's another one. A friend visits you. It's your birthday. I think I might have mentioned this in the past. They bring you a gift. They don't just bring you any gift. It's wrapped in wrapping paper. Now you see all the gifts piling up on this table that's laid out for your friends to come and leave those gifts. You wanted your friends to come and visit you because it's your birthday. But the moment you start seeing these gifts piling up, do you not want them to leave as soon as possible? If you've eaten, why the hell don't you just go now? Haven't you got a home to go to? Would you like me to ring dad for him to come and collect you, pick you up? I mean, just go, please. That's what you're thinking, you know, surely you can't go and tell that to him in his face. But why do you feel that feeling of tension, that feeling of stress, that feeling of anticipation, that wanting to know? That wanting to get is because you have a desire for something. When you're desirous of something, again, I'll give you another example. I mean, I can give you plenty of examples until this sinks in with you. Let's say it's your birthday. And you know your family's been planning something because although they haven't made it obvious to you, you've seen people tiptoeing around you. There have been doors closing rapidly behind your backs, hints being passed to each other, things being hidden under the sofa as you walk into the room and you don't, you know, and you know what's going on, but you can't quite put your finger on it. So you want to know, what have they planned for me? And until that moment comes when they say, surprise, and when you go, it was never a surprise, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to say that to you to your face. I knew this was coming all along. I mean, you know, think about when your young kids try to organize a surprise party for you, and you know everything that's going on. They're using your card, for heaven's sake, to order the gift. On your bank statement it says, kapruka.com. You know they don't sell houses on that. They sell gifts. So you know all this, but you know that feeling of, I want to know what's going on, I want to get what it is that I am desiring, is a feeling of unease. It's a feeling of anticipation, and that feeling of anticipation is never a comfortable one, is it? Is it a comfortable feeling or an uncomfortable feeling? It's an uncomfortable feeling. I mean, certainly it is for me. So, where did that uncomfortable feeling come from? What's the root for that? Desire, absolutely. So the moment you planted the seed of desire, you're now in anticipation, you're now in wanting, you're now feeling that tension in you, that stress in you, until you get what it is that you want. So if you now think that desire, well, all this time we thought desire brings us happiness and nothing else. Well, we've now just encountered one feeling of unhappiness, one feeling of discomfort, one situation or one example of suffering, I would say. I mean, I know this is not suffering in a great deal, but you know, it is a kind of suffering. It's a kind of uncomfortable feeling. But it's certainly not a positive feeling, it's a negative feeling. So here's one negative feeling that desire gave you. Right, that's one on negative, zero on positive so far. Let's keep going. To get what you want, can you just sit on your backsides all day and wait for someone to come and bring it to you? Or do you have to go and work for it? Is there ever such a thing as a free lunch? No, there's never such a thing as a free lunch. You have to work for it. You have to do kaya karma, vachi karma, mano karma. Think, speak and do. These actions you have to engage, you have to exert your body, your speech and your mind to acquire the things that you want. Let's go back to one of those examples that we discussed. Let's say we talked about women going into clothes shops. Let's pick on men for a change. You walk past the BMW showroom, or you drive past it in your Maruti. You see this nice spanking car. Now that's what I like. That's what a true gentleman drives. No, that's not your thought. It says that on the window. This is what a true gentleman drives. Remember we talked about Asatpurusha and how they fill your minds with these views about the world? That was all we discussed in the previous weeks. So anyway, now you want to be a true gentleman. You don't just want to be any old gentleman. You're a true gentleman. So a true gentleman must drive a BMW. By the way, I've got nothing against BMWs, okay? I'm just using an example. So if you've got a BMW, I'm not picking on you guys. This is just an example. If you want a Toyota, I'll take a Toyota. It doesn't matter. Right? Okay, so we'll go with BMW for now. Now, when you think, this is the car that I want to buy, from that point forward, you're going to have to do certain things to go and acquire that. And a car is not the only example. What about that time when you saw that girl that you thought, she's pretty. How I wish she could be my girlfriend. Could you just sit on your backside and wait for her to come and ask you out? No, you had to do certain things for that. You started to dress differently. You started to comb your hair differently. Previously, you just woke up in the morning, didn't even bother brushing your teeth, just drank or gulped down a cup of tea that your mother made for you, picked up your books and you went to school or you went to your tuition class. But as if by coincidence, there was this girl in your class. She was sat a few rows ahead of you. And one fine day, she turned her head around and she was just looking at the room. But, oh alas, her eyes met with yours. That changed your life. Her eyes met with yours. That changed your life. The following day you went shopping. What for? A tube of gel, hair gel. Another tube, toothpaste. You didn't have toothpaste in your belongings. What else? Deodorant. You didn't have a bottle of deodorant in your wardrobe, but you need one now. You used to go to class with your flip-flops on, but that doesn't cut it any longer. I need a pair of Adidas shoes. Matching socks. Those days it used to be one colored and one black and white. They weren't even of the same pair, but now they've got to match. Now you dress smart. You can't just go with disheveled hair, you've got to brush your hair. Well, at least your mother's happy because now you shower every day. Before the girl's eyes met yours, it was once a week, if she was lucky. But now things have changed. Why all this effort? Because you want to acquire what it is that you desire. Acquire what you desire. That's nice for a poem, is it not? Let's all acquire what we desire. Well, that's what we've been trying to do all our lives. Trying to acquire what we desire. And now, all that effort that you've had to make, whether it's buying the car, you go and check your bank balance, I haven't got all the money I need. So what do you need to do? Borrow some money. You either have to go to the bank or you have to go and ask your friends. When did ever anyone enjoy applying for a loan? Was that ever a good feeling? Or at least even asking your friends, ringing them around, Machan, can I have borrow some money, please? I promise I'll return it to you. Did you feel really good about yourself when you went asking for money? Or did you feel this small? You felt that small. And then, if say you are determined that you're not going to be borrowing any money, but you're going to earn that money. Well, you used to work 8 to 5. Now, it's 8 to 5 and then 5 to 8. Used to work 12-hour shifts or 8-hour shifts and now they're 16-hour shifts. I know people that do this. A lot of young teenagers who come to the UK while I was there, I know, a lot of them come on student visas. I know some people that I used to associate there. We have a lot of students who come both from Sri Lanka, from India, and a lot from the Indian subcontinent. Some of them, believe you me, ladies and gentlemen, some are doctors, not medical doctors, but they have PhDs. There was one guy who was a doctor in microbiotechnology. Thinking, wow, what a brain box you are. And what he's doing? He's folding shirts at Primark. If you don't know what Primark is, it's like Fashion House. They don't call it Fashion House any longer, do they? Anyway, it doesn't matter, you know what I'm saying. So this guy, this is what he's doing now. But he worked so hard to be able to come to the UK. And he didn't come and do his PhD to go and become a practitioner in microbiotechnology. No, he did his PhD to be able to come to the UK. That was it. Because he desired life there. He thought that's where he could earn money. And there are people who work in restaurants as chefs and waiters. They've done master's degrees in chemistry, physics, biology. And I'm thinking, good heavens. Was that ever an easy task? Taking out the girl that you like on prom, was that ever easy? Going and asking her out? You know, you used to have a lingo, a certain lexicon, a set of words that you used to use. But as soon as that those eyes met yours, now those words are out. You don't use those words anymore. Now you talk like a, you speak like a gentleman. Samaven, excuse me, thank you, please. Previously, hey, give me that. Now, please may I have that. All these pretenses, all these things, all these karmas, either vachi karma, mano karma or kaya karma, you're doing to be able to acquire what it is that you desire. But doing all those things, is that fun? Having to change the way you look, having to change, I mean, you know, why do you go to a saloon? To change the way you look. Why? Because you really look ugly, I'm sorry. You don't like the way you look, that's why you go to a salon. When you know it's time for a potential groom to come and visit you, you know, ladies here might have that experience. When it's, you know, when sometimes people go looking for their potential brides, and you know, as you put on the newspaper and you ring up and then you make an appointment and then you go see them, you know, now that on that day you make extra effort. You cut your, you trim your fingernails, you paint your fingernails, you're dressed in the best clothes that you have, sometimes new clothes. You paint your house, you sweep all the rooms. The flower bushes, they all get trimmed and they're all nice and neat and prim and proper. Why is this? To acquire what you desire. But doing all those things, was that ever fun? Well, if it were fun, you would have done it before, would you have not? If those things were fun, if painting your house is fun, then you'd be doing it all year round. But no, you do it when there's a particular occasion or someone has to come and visit you. If getting taken out a loan was fun, then you'd go taking out loans every other Sunday. But you don't do that. Taking out a loan is not fun, but acquiring what you desire is fun. But in order to do that, you have to exert yourself. Mentally, physically. So none of that is fun. And all of that now again goes into what? Positive feelings or negative feelings? How you feel when you have to do the things that you necessarily don't like to do. Okay, here's another one. Ladies in the room, who here likes cooking? You know, I love cooking. You know, I'll cook all day long if you ask me to. Recently we did a sermon at Visakha College. I think it was just last week. And I remember I asked this question and there were lots of young girls there. I said, who here likes to cook? And I could see a few arms go up. Well, you know, as young girls, and I'm sure you'll remember, you like to cook. But then you cook because that was what you liked doing. It was a hobby. You know, you used to try out different things. You couldn't even feed your dog what you cooked, but nevertheless, you liked cooking. But you liked cooking then because even if whatever you cooked came out like something that you couldn't even eat, well, your mother would still come and cook your meal for you anyway. That's why you liked cooking, because it was just a hobby. Not because you really, really liked cooking. You like to eat. Again, not chewing, I don't mean chewing, but you like to taste. You like to eat the foods that you like, not because you like chewing. Well, if you like chewing and if that's so fun, well, why don't you all start chewing now? Okay, go on. Just chew. You know, like how the cows do when you look at them? When they're grazing on the grass, they just go like that. Go on. Do you really like chewing? No. Do you like cooking? No. So you have to do all these things that you don't really like. But to acquire what you desire, you have to exert yourself. So all those feelings that you feel, having to go out taking that loan, having to work extra hours, having to change the way you dress, having to change the way you walk, having to change the way you comb your hair, having to take a wash every day when that's the last thing that you like to do. All those things you have to do because you want to acquire what you desire. So all those things have to go into the what? The positive box or the negative box? Into the negative box. So now it's 2-0. 2-0. What was the root for that? Desire. Let's keep going. Because you say desire or attachment brings you happiness. Well, let's go prove that hypothesis if possible. So eventually you do all what you have to do and now you go and acquire what it is that you desired. You bought that BMW. You managed to get that girl to say yes. You managed to buy that dress. What else? You managed to cook what it is that you wanted. You know, it's now ready. It's now on your table. It's prepared. It's ready to eat. You ordered your pizza. All that is now ready. Okay, so now you've acquired what you desire. Here's a question. Name one thing that you all desire and you possess that nobody else in this world wants. Name one thing that you own, you possess, and nobody else in this world wants. I'll give you some examples, and you know, to help you. Your wife. Your child. Your car. Do you want me to keep going? Your phone. Your wallet. The money in your bank account. Your chain. Your necklace. Your shoes. Your underwear. What, you think I'm kidding? How many times have you put your clothes on the clothesline, go to take it back, and your underwear's gone missing? Happens. Happens. I don't want to give more detail to it, but I think half of this room will know what I'm talking about. At least. At least the ladies will know. Everything that you own, somebody else wants. Somebody else wants. So the moment you have acquired what you desire, well, guess what? There's a whole heap of other people that want to acquire what you've now acquired because that is also what they desire. Why do you think we have robbers? And because they all want what it is that you possess. How is a robber born? I mean, what is a robber? Who's a robber? It's someone that takes what doesn't belong to them. So if it doesn't belong to them, who does it belong to? It belongs to you. So you've acquired it and now they want it. So the moment you have acquired it, who's got to keep it safe? Me? You. Which of those things that I just called out, do you not have to keep safe? Is it your wife? Is it your child? Is it your underwear? Everything. Your necklace. Your shoes. I mean, have you never gone to a temple and you come back and your shoes have gone missing, gone for a walk by themselves? Is this not why when you go to a temple you leave one shoe on one side and the other shoe on the other? Maybe not in Colombo. But I'm sure a lot of you will have that experience. And also this is why when you get out of the car at the temple you leave your shoes in the car. Or sometimes I know some people, like I said, they leave one shoe on one side of the temple and the other on the other because then, you know, people only find one of the pair. So they're not so interested in stealing it. So the moment you became the owner of what you desired, the moment you acquired it, do you all not become security guards? You become security guards. Of each and everything that you have acquired, you are all security guards. The necklace that's around your neck, who gets to admire its beauty? Do you get to admire its beauty? Others admire its beauty. But who's got to keep it safe? You. What about your earrings? Who gets to admire its beauty? Others. But who has to keep it safe? Yes. You know, sometimes people ask me, when they observe the Uposatha Sila, the 8 precepts, why is it that the Lord Buddha stipulated this precept, which is Natchagita Vadita Visuka Dasana Mala Ganda Vilepana Dharana Mandana Vibhusanatthana Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhyam? The meaning of which is, I shall not engage in singing or dancing or other forms of entertainment for the duration that I have observed this precept, and I shall also not wear gold and silver and things like that. People ask me, why did the Buddha give us that precept? Has he not just kind of tried to constrain and restrain our freedom? Well, the Buddha was who gifted us liberation, the path to liberation. Why would he come and restrain you? Why would he come and restrain your freedom? It's a good question to ask. My answer to that question is, ladies and gentlemen, what the Buddha really said was, stop doing things for the benefit of others. Stop becoming security guards. Stop exerting yourself. Stop hurting and putting yourself into pain for the benefit of others. When you're on a stage and you're dancing away, who gets to enjoy that? Well, the people that are looking at you, the people who are watching you, the audience. But who's got to work hard for it? You, all the hours of training that you've put to it. When you're at the opera, when you're singing, who gets to enjoy that? Everyone else that's watching you, everyone else that's listening to you. And as I said before, the necklace that's around your neck, the earrings that are on your ears, who gets to observe, who takes pleasure from them by looking at it? Everyone else. But who's got to take care of it? You've got to take care of it. And why is that? Because somebody wants whatever it is that you desire. So the moment you have acquired it, you all become security guards. So far it's 2-0. Who here likes to be a security guard? Who here likes to feel, oh, did we lock the door when we left home? Who here likes that feeling? You know, that feeling of, good heavens, I'm not sure if I lock the door. Well, if you like that feeling, then why do you travel back home to check if you really lock the door? Why do you sometimes wake up in the middle of the night and come and check all your doors? Just to double check, just to make double sure. Do you not do that? Why do you sometimes go and switch off your cooker? Or sometimes, you know, the electrical appliances at home. You're in bed, but you get up and go and check just to make sure. Is the gate locked? All these things you do because you don't enjoy that feeling, right? Because if you do enjoy the feeling, then just go to bed. Leave all your doors and everything open. So if you're not prepared to do that, then I think we can all agree that that's a feeling that is not positive. It's a negative feeling. So one more to the positive basket or one more to the negative basket? One more to the negative basket. What's the score now? 3-0. Let's keep going. Attachment brings you happiness, right? Let's keep going. We're on the path looking for the truth. Like I said, keep put Nibbana to a side, put becoming an Arahant to a side. Let's go looking for the truth. That's all we need to do. Because whether you're a Muslim, whether you're a Christian, whether you're a Hindu, what I've said so far, does that not apply universally to all of these people? Does a Muslim not have to protect his belongings? Does a Christian not have to protect their belongings? Or is it something that we Buddhists do? No, it's a universal feeling. Even a dog has to protect its litter. Right? Yes. So if you're alive, if you're a being whose heart is beating, these things apply to you universally. And what's the root for this? Desire. Attachment. Let's keep going. Okay, so now you've acquired it, and now you all agree that you're the security guards of all these things that you possess. What's up next? Which one thing, if you can answer this question, that you own because you acquired it, because you desired it, does not go to decay and death? Which one thing? Is there anything? Now, which one thing that you've acquired because of desire? So again, I'll give you some examples. Your mother. Do you not like your mother? Of course you all love your mother. You like your mother. No, you love your mother. Truly. Your children. Do they not go to decay and death? Your phone. Does it not go to decay and death? Your computer. Yes. Your clothes. Your house. Your car. Your wife. All these things decay and die. When was the last time you were happy because something you liked decayed and died? Never. Was there ever a time that you threw a party because your mother died? Anyone heard of someone do that? No. What you throw is a funeral, not a party. Although some people think of it as a party. And they come there to party. But we're not talking about them. We're talking about the effect that it has on you. When was the last time your watch went missing? You know, say your car keys. Have you never had, my goodness, the times I've been in that situation. It's been in my blooming pocket all along. But I'm looking for it. I've turned my house upside down one day looking for my car keys. And guess where they were? In my pocket. But the feeling that I had when it went missing. The feeling that you have when something decays, when something dies, and it's something that you desire, whether it's a thing or whether it's a person, is that a positive feeling or a negative feeling? It's absolutely, most certainly a negative feeling. There's no one here that will say, no, it's a positive feeling. Do we all universally agree? When something that you like, when something that you desire decays and dies, does that not give you a negative feeling? Negative feeling. So, which basket do we put that into? Positive basket or a negative basket? Negative basket. My young helpers here are here to help me today deliver my sermon. How grateful I am to all of you. My young assistants. May the force be with you. So, what's the score now? 4-0. 4-0, right? 4-0 so far. Let's keep going. Now, let's be fair, right? Because you're probably thinking, well, after all, we went and acquired that because it gave us a sense of happiness. I didn't just go and buy a car to get me a heap of unhappiness. I bought that car because it does give me happiness. I went out and ate at that restaurant because it did give me happiness. I went and got married to that beautiful girl because that did make me happy. I had a kid because, well, kids do make me happy from time to time. From time to time. So let's be fair, right? Let's not be unfair in this game. So when your kid behaves nicely, when he does all his homework, when he takes that shower every day, does that not make you happy? Of course it makes you happy. When you get into that brand new car and it smells of new car, that new car feeling, you put your arms on the steering wheel, you feel like you're the king of the world. How does that make you feel? Does that not make you feel happy? Of course that makes you feel happy. That's why you went through all that to get it, right? So, that's a positive feeling surely, is it not? That's not a negative feeling, let's be fair, right? That's a positive feeling. Would you all agree? When you had your baby, your child, and as a mother or a father you saw its face for the first time, those tears that you had weren't tears of sorrow, those tears were tears of happiness. Absolutely, I have no doubt about that. So let's all be fair. One into which basket? Positive feelings or negative feelings? Positive, thank you very much. So what's the score now? 4-1, yes. Now, what I want you to think about at this point is that one that we put into the positive basket, let's analyze that. Oh, I'm heartless, aren't I? You know, finally you thought, yes, we managed to get one out of him, and now he has to come and pick on that as well. Well, we're on the path to finding the truth, right? I'm not throwing the truth at you. I'm asking you to think. I'm encouraging you to think because you're intelligent people. You're all clever people. You're giving me the answers. I'm asking you the questions. I'm asking you which basket do you want to put it in. You're free to put it into whichever basket you like. I didn't say it has to go into this basket. So far, it was you that gave me the score, 4-1. I didn't give you that. But all I'm doing is getting you to think, analyze. Right. So let's go back to that one that you put into the positive basket. That positive feeling, that sense of happiness that you got, when you bought that new car, when you got into that new car, when your child passes his exams and comes home and says, "Mother, I got an A+. When your baby is born and you can see that beautiful smile on its face, well, it's usually not a smiling face at first, it's crying like there's no tomorrow, but at least you know it's alive and kicking. So that still makes you happy nevertheless. I mean, you ask the baby, is it happy? He's asking, where the hell am I right now? I mean, think about a baby, right? That first few moments it's alive, it's hearing all these noises like it's pounding on his ears because it was not used to all that noise while it was in the mother's womb. All these bright flashes of light. The baby's completely, it's going bonkers. So what's going on right now? That's how a baby feels. But as a mother, as a father, as a brother, as a sister, as an uncle, as an aunt, you're feeling elated. Yes, my baby child. So, that's what we put into the positive basket. Now, what I want you to ask yourselves is, why did we put that into the positive basket? Because it gave us positive feelings. Why did it give you a positive feeling? It gave you happiness. But why did it give you happiness? Remember last time we spoke about eating at the buffet a few weeks ago? Remember eating at the buffet? We talked about... No? Okay. Let me remind you. I used to really like going to the buffet. And I don't know about you, but when I was a young man, many, 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 many years ago, When I was at university, particularly, you know, my friends and I, we would try to find some time where we could all get together, particularly after the end of some exams, and we would go to the buffet. So when we go to the buffet, what we do is we starve ourselves about 3 days before that. Because when you go to the buffet, oh, you want to eat. They say, eat as much as you can. Oh, wait until we eat as much as you can. We'll show you how a man eats. That's how we go into that restaurant. You know, like it's like when the Avengers come into the scene. There's music in the background, like the heroes walking into the restaurant. Beware, the eaters have walked into the restaurant. We are going to wreak havoc here. We're going to eat all that food. We're going to make you go bankrupt. That's how we went into restaurants. So we went and got ourselves plates, rolled up our sleeves, preparing ourselves to eat. the belts would loosen up as well to make room. I know why you're all laughing. You can't hide this from me. Your face is a mirror. You've all been there, I know it. How do I know? Well, I've been there. So your plate is ready, you now start walking down the aisle, walking past each of these dishes. You starve yourself for 3 days and three nights. It's like the Arabian Nights now. And now you start serving yourself. Fried rice, noodles, stew, this, that, king prawns, and what? Chicken made in 10 different ways. All that goes on your plate. It's now a mountain of food on your plate. And you take this back to your table, ready to eat. The waiter comes along and asks, "Can I get you some drinks?" "Later, later, not now." "Can't you see I've been starving for 3 days? I'm not prepared to talk right now." So you're sat down by the table. Hand and fork? Oh, to hell with that. My hands are good enough. Now you start munching. Food starts going into your mouth. At what speed? Really? Oh, you are so polite. What a gentleman. When I was at that buffet restaurant, that was at 200 miles an hour. A Bugatti Veyron could not keep up with me. And you thought speed of light was the fastest anything could go, right? No. You should have seen me eat at the restaurant. That food went into me like there was no tomorrow, like eating was going out of fashion. Mouth after mouth, no one's talking. There's 10 of us around the table, not a word comes out. Everyone's just eating away. Doesn't matter what comes into your hand, pick up, gulp. Forget chewing, well, your tummy can worry about that. An hour goes in the first mouthful. Second mouthful, 180 miles an hour. Third, 150 miles an hour. Well, it looks like it's slowing down gradually. Well, it is. That's the truth. Why is it slowing down? I'm not feeling as hungry. Nevertheless, it's going fast. It's still going in fast. 150 is fast, right? No doubts about that. So the food's going in rapidly. Now, as I said, I've served myself a mountain full of food. Is this the amount of food that I serve to feed my stomach or to feed my mind? To feed my mind. Well, you know, don't you? This was to feed my mind. By the time I've taken in about 10 mouthfuls, there's still plenty of food on my plate. But now I stop to have a chat with my friend. We stop to discuss and criticize the food. Before this was ambrosia, food for the gods. Now all of a sudden, there's a little bit too much salt in this, is it? Is there not? That's a bit too spicy, don't you think? Well, why did I not feel all of that 10 minutes ago? Now we've all become critics of food. All of a sudden. Now we ask the waiter to come. "Can you please get us some drinks?" "Well, I came before and yeah, I know, but can you get some drinks now? Thank you very much." Now we start ordering drinks and whatnot. And now we start talking about friends, we start talking about family. Now, you know, the spoon and the fork come into our hands. And we think, well, actually, you know what, this is a nice and good restaurant, so we better behave ourselves. Let's actually use some utensils here and stop eating like dogs. Right? So now we start behaving ourselves. Why this change all of a sudden? Well, to think about it, I'm not feeling as hungry as I used to. Certainly not as much as I felt when I walked into this restaurant. So if I drew a graph hunger on one axis and the speed with which I am prepared to take in food on the other, as my hunger reduces, what else reduces? The speed with which I am prepared to eat. Let's draw another graph. Hunger on one axis. The delight that I can get from eating the food that's served in front of me. How happy I feel about taking the food that I've just served myself. How do you think that graph's performing? Indeed, sir. The less hungry you feel, the less you're beginning to feel, or the less you're feeling that this food is ambrosia. Now you all started becoming critics of the food. Now you're thinking, well, you know what, next time I'm not going to serve myself this, I'm going to serve myself that. So when actually you go around the second time, you're very picky about the foods that you serve yourself. Why this change? Well, we started this discussion trying to find how we were able to put that one into that box, the positive feelings box. Do you not remember, I think you will, some time ago we discussed this. That feeling of happiness that you get when you unwrap a present. That feeling of happiness you get when you eat something. That feeling of happiness when you, again I'll give you something that you can relate to at this moment in time. Are you all sat in exactly the same posture that you were sat at the beginning of this sermon? Why is that? You had your arms folded before, now they are stretched out. You had one leg on top of the other before. Now they're all flat on the ground. Why this change? Because you want to make yourself comfortable. Because you were beginning to feel uncomfortable. To relieve yourself of uncomfortableness, you changed your posture. To relieve yourself of hunger, what did you do? You ate. To relieve yourself, you know, when your son came home and said, "Mother, I got myself an A+, did that not relieve you of something? It did. Did you not go, "Son, I'm so happy to hear that"? Where did that sigh come from? That was that tension that was built inside of you. It's always relief from discomfort that brings you happiness. You changed your posture into a different posture and you are sat in that posture now. How long do you think you can remain in this particular posture? Well, if you thought this posture is the posture that's going to bring you the greatest amount of comfort, well, freeze. Stay right where you are, just the same way you are until the end of this sermon, and let's see how you feel how you feel then. These fans are turning right now. Perhaps after a little while you're going to start feeling a bit chilly and then the fans are going to go off one by one. Well, if you thought, well, you know, that first feeling of, oh, I'm feeling cool, that's a nice breeze. That feeling was a relief from feeling the heat. You know, think about it. Why do people in colder countries visit Sri Lanka and hotter countries? You know, why do you see a lot of white people from the UK, from Canada, from, you know, those countries? They come on holiday to Sri Lanka, to Maldives and to hot countries, and sometimes they go and sunbathe. You ever thought of sunbathing? Would you ever do that? No. Why? Because you're sick and tired of this heat. You're always complaining about the heat. So what do? You go there on holiday. Always looking for what? To acquire what you desire. But you do so to relieve yourself of discomfort. To relieve yourself of pain. To relieve yourself of suffering. So while I'll let you all keep that one in that box, because you put it there, I have no right to challenge you. You're all intelligent people. I can't insult your intelligence. No way will I do that. I'll let you keep that one in that box. But what I want you to understand is the backstory behind that. That one went into the positive feelings box only because you were feeling unhappy. You were feeling stress. You were feeling anxiety. You were feeling pain or discomfort of some sort prior to that. Relief from discomfort is what brought you happiness. Relief from discomfort is what always brings you comfort. Now I want you to think. Think about your own lives. Think about your life experiences and see if there's anything that does not agree with that. Because that is what you need to do to understand the reality. Understand the truth. Not just accepting whatever I say. You've got to analyze it. You've got to ask yourself, does that apply to me? Is that true? Is that true in all cases? I mean, you know, this is how science works. And you're all scientists. Science can, you know, whatever science comes out with can only be true if it's true in all situations. A statement will be false if it's false in at least one situation. Then you can't apply it universally. So for me to be saying, or for all of us to be saying here, that comfort can only be found in relieving yourself from discomfort, well, you need to go into your labs. Remember once we talked about your laboratories, your labs at home, your labs in the classroom, your labs in your workplaces. You know, you come here to take the Dhamma, but your laboratories are your workplaces, your home. So don't run away from your labs. That's where you ought to be. That's where you practice what you've learned. And apply what you've learned and make it true for yourselves. So this is what you should be doing right now. Think. And ask yourself, is there any time where I felt comfort, where there was no discomfort previous to that? I'll give you a very simple example. As a mother, let's say you've got two children. They're identical in all other ways except for the fact that once one of your children is, their ranking in their class is that they always come in between the 20th or the 30th in the class. And there are about 50 students in the classroom. Then there's another child of yours who is a top performer in the classroom. And he's always in the top three. He's either the first, second, or the third. At the end of exams, they both come home and they tell you, "Mother, I was first in the class today," says the child that is usually in the top three. Now that, of course, makes you happy. What if the other son also comes and says, "Mother, I was first in the class today"? Which makes you happier? The second. Why is that? Say again? Yes. It's because you suffer more. I'm not saying your son makes you suffer, but that pain, that discomfort, that suffering that your child is not able to perform well in the classroom is something you've been suffering from for a long time. And now your son just came home and relieved you of that suffering. He says, "Mother, I was first in the class." That makes you go, that elates you. You feel so happy. But when that child who's always first, second or third in class comes and says, "Mother, I was first today as well." Yeah, well, I kind of expected that. So you see, the more you're in discomfort, the more you're in suffering, the more you're in pain, relief from that brings you as much happiness, as much pain as you were in before. Remember when we talked about watching a movie and how that makes you happy? Well, you'll have to go back and listen to previous sermons. Otherwise, I'm going to have to keep going over old stuff every day. Remember how going on a roller coaster makes you happy? If you haven't listened to it, again, go back and listen to previous sermons. Because, you know, if we don't stop to analyze these things, then we just let people do whatever they like to us. You just go with the flow. Just going with the flow is not the path to finding happiness. It's not the path to finding the truth. Just going with the flow. When did anyone find happiness by just going with the flow? How did you all manage to be successful in your lives? Did you all just go with the flow? Or did you act differently to how everyone else did? You were part of the 20%, not part of the 80%, right? That's how you became successful in your life. So you didn't go with the flow. Well, the same applies to for Dhamma as well. If you want to find the truth, if you want to find true happiness, then don't just go with the flow. Question. Analyze. If you can't think for yourselves, go and listen to the sermons. I remember when I was in the UK, I went to all the, leisure parks that we used to have there. And so I used to go along with my wife. We were like little kids back then. We didn't have kids of our own, so we were kids. There was once one place called Peppa Pig Land. Do you know Peppa Pig? Some of you young kids might know. We went to Peppa Pig's world as well, where there's all these little brats with their parents, and then the two of us, everyone's looking, where's their kid? You're looking at them. And I remember there was this roller coaster there, and so I'll very briefly tell you about this roller coaster and how that makes you happy. What a roller coaster do does is you get on the roller coaster, and now you can, you know, they play all kinds of music in the background, you know, it tenses you up. You know, get ready, be prepared. This is the ride of your life. You're going to be thrilled. It's going to splash your brain, so hold fast, they say. That really tenses me up. So you're listening to those announcements and you're thinking, good grief, should I just get out right now? No, they've already buckled you up. It would be shameful to now walk out. So you're sat in your car, the car that's going to take you on the roller coaster. And now what they do is, there was one roller coaster ride that took you from 0 to 80 miles per hour in 2 seconds. My God, that was a ride. So, you let go. The release mechanism works and now the car is speeding up. And then it takes you up. It elevates you to a certain height. Of course, you can't see how far you're going up until you look down. That's when you start to regret. I really shouldn't have gotten onto this ride. Now you can see where this is going to go. And all those stories of how things went wrong on roller coaster rides start coming, start flashing in front of you. What if this comes loose? You start holding on to the person next to you. Doesn't matter who it is. It could be your granny. You're holding on to your granny right now. She's thinking, good heavens, I should be holding on to you. So you're holding fast just in case something bad happens. You're regretting and now you're really tensed. You can feel your hormones running wild in your body. Your brain's gone into panic mode. It's thinking, what the hell are you putting me through right now? But it's too late because you're on top of the ride. What happens then? It comes down. And then it comes to a stop. And you feel safe. And you feel, thank God for that. I'm still alive. My heart's beating. Yes, thank you. Isn't that the feeling that you went after? Isn't that how a roller coaster gave you that happiness that you went after? Because it gave you that tension, it gave you that stress, and then you were relieved from that stress. What if they stopped at the top and then said, take the stairs down? You wouldn't go on that twice, would you? You'd go ask for a refund. No, you needed to bring you back down and make you feel safe. So it's not the going up that makes you feel happy, it's the coming back down that makes you feel happy. But to come back down, you have to be up in the first place. So, would you all then agree with me then, that the only reason we could put that one in the positive box is because you were in the negative box prior to that? Discomfort, release from discomfort is what brings you comfort. Relief from unhappiness, relief from stress, relief from this feeling of anticipation, this feeling of wanting to know, that's what brings you happiness. So whether it's buying that car, whether it's getting married to the woman that you like, whether it's your children coming home and say they've passed their exams, whatever the case might be, or whether it's unwrapping your presents at home, again we've talked about this, you know, unwrapping your present at home makes you happier than finding out or actually using what has been gifted to you. Think about it. When you unwrap your gift, that feeling of finding out what it was that was wrapped up in the first place is a more pleasurable feeling than actually playing with that toy or whatever it was that was there. Because why? Because you were, that there was that feeling of stress, that feeling of wanting to know, that agitation, that nervousness that was released. So when your brain goes back into safe mode, from panic mode, then you feel happy. You know, we've talked about lots of examples in the past, how watching a movie makes you happy. You know, go back and listen to previous sermons and you'll come across this. So again, so we have now a score. What's our score, guys? 4-1. 4-1. But I think we've just discovered another one. The relief. It's the pain, that discomfort you are in prior to being released from, you know, prior to being able to enjoy that pleasurable feeling. So clearly that has to go in which box? Positive or negative? That's got to go in the negative box. So what's the score now then? 5-1. 5-1. Let's keep going. We haven't stopped yet. There's more to go. Well, you know, because you're intelligent people. At the end of this sermon, we can add up both sides and then you can come to your own conclusion. How do you know which team won the game? You add up the scores, right? So at the end of this, we'll tally up the scores and see which team won. Whether it's the positive team or the negative team. And then based on that, you can tell me whether your, this notion of attachment, desire is what brings me happiness, stands the test of time. And whether it stands the test of intelligence. And it stands the test of wisdom. Because like I said, right now, we think we've beaten the Buddha 40-1. He's there, sat there saying, attachment brings you suffering. And we're all sat here saying, yeah, what do you know? Attachment brings us happiness. So we're on this journey trying to see what is right, what is wrong. And this is our journey of discovery. King Satcha Gavisi. What else are we doing? You're all bodhisattvas. The bodhisattva did not know what Nibbana was. He went looking for the truth. Just the same as you're all now on this path looking for the truth. So let's keep going. One more step forward. Having acquired the things that you desire, you now want to enjoy them. Whether it's something that you like to eat, well then of course you've got to go and eat it. If it's something that you like to look at, then you've got to go and look at it. If it's something that you've got to listen to, I mean if it's a song for instance, then you've got to listen to it. If it's a drama, then you've got to go and watch it. So you have to engage your senses to enjoy this. Would you agree? Whether it's your sight, sound, taste, smell, or physical sensation. One of these senses must be engaged. At least one of these senses must be engaged. Now, let me ask you this question. Why were you born? Why do you have the bodies that you have today? We've talked about this briefly in the past, but if it doesn't ring a bell, we'll revisit that. You know, okay, let's park that question to one side. I'll ask you this question. What bits of your body do you really like? Now, you don't have to shout out the answers because it could be personal. But you can all answer this question for yourself. Which bits of your body, okay, let me put it this way. Which bits of your body do you have pictures of that you framed and you put up in your bedroom? Your mind, okay. Do you have a picture of your mind in your living bedroom? Okay, let me rephrase that question then. What do you have pictures of in your bedroom? What do you have pictures of? Us, yes. So your family, right? Sometimes places you've been to? Friends, yes, friends. So when you go see your friends, what are the things you're doing? You can see them, you can hear them, you can touch them, right? So again, you're engaging your senses to experience them. When you go on holiday, if you go to the beach for instance, how do you experience the beach? You can see the beach. You can hear the waves crashing. You can feel the soft sand under your feet. You can hear the birds, the seagulls. So all these sounds you've experienced, all these sights you've experienced, you can see the sunset. Of course, these things you will take pictures of, won't you? You'll have pictures here you put on Facebook, you'll have pictures you put on Instagram, and you'll have pictures you put on your bedroom wall. These are framed up. When was the last time you took a picture of your kidneys and you put up on your bedroom wall? What about your eyes? Did you zoom into your eyes and take a picture of them and put on in your living room? Was that ever done? Ever heard of a man who did that? No. Okay, what about your intestines? When your grandfather passed away, did you ask the doctor for the intestines and put them into formalin and put it up on on a pedestal? No, people don't generally do things like that. That would be a little bit absurd. So the things that you like, ladies and gentlemen, are the things that you can experience through your senses. The sights, the sounds, the tastes, the smells, and the physical sensations. This is what you go after. I think if you remember, I asked you the question once before. If you've been to the cinema lately, and you looked either side of you, did you ever see a pair of eyes sat on a seat watching the movie? No. A pair of eyes never came there by themselves, did they? When you went to a gig, or let's say a music concert. You go to a concert, right? Whether it's an opera or some kind of other concert. Did you ever look to your side and see a pair of ears sat there listening to music? No, because a pair of eyes or a pair of ears can't come there by itself. A tongue can't go to a buffet restaurant by itself. It doesn't have two legs to walk on. It needs a body. And so you have a body. Your eyes can't eat, but your eyes need nourishment. You can't take rice and shove it inside your eyes. That wouldn't work. You can't shove it inside your ears because that wouldn't work. So you need a mouth with which you can eat. Now just putting food through your mouth is not enough because you need an esophagus that takes your food down into your stomach, and then you need your gastric juices to come and do their stuff, your HCl and your other acids that come and do all that stuff inside, and then your bladder and your liver and then your spleen, and it does all those things inside of you and starts to digest your food. But you never took a picture of your liver and put it in your bedroom wall, did you? So all these supporting systems that support your eyes, you're not fond of, quite frankly, are you? No. You see, think about your favorite picture. If someone were to take away your favorite picture, that would annoy you. You wouldn't like that. You wouldn't call someone that did that a friend. But when people's heart starts to fail, when their kidneys start to fail, they're quite happily prepared to take someone else's kidney, someone else's heart, someone else's whatever other part of the body that can be replaced these days. So you're prepared to throw away something that is part of your body and take something that used to belong to someone else and call it yours now, but the sights and the sounds that you really love, you're not prepared to throw away. This is why you have loads of albums tucked away at home. I'm sure you'll all have this. That's why you have terabytes of photos stored on your computer. That's why you have stacks of DVDs stacked at home. These are all the sights and the sounds that you like, and you don't want anyone touching them. But the eyes, when the eyes fail and an eye can be replaced, then you're quite happily prepared to throw your eyes away and get a new pair of eyes. So the things that you like are not the things that let you look, but it's the sights that you look at. What you like are not your ears, but the sounds that your ears can experience. What you like is not your tongue, but the tastes that your tongue can experience. So it's these sensations that you really love and so you desire and therefore you want to acquire. But to allow your senses to acquire all of these things, you have to be born with a body. A physical body that you all possess, that you all have. But what about all the pain that you have to endure up until this point, all your life so far, all the ailments that you had to treat. You know, you grow old. The sights that you saw don't grow old. You grow old, but the songs that you heard, you listened to, that music that you listened to, that doesn't grow old. I mean, yes, it goes out of fashion, but it doesn't grow old. The sights that you saw don't grow old. The taste that you tasted, that doesn't grow old, but your tongue grows old. Your tongue is subject to disease. Your body is subject to disease. Who's got to pay for that? Who's got to endure that suffering? You've got to endure that suffering indeed. We've talked about this in the past. You know, think about how many pills you take a day now. You know, when you were a young boy or a young girl, perhaps not that many, but today, how many times did you go to the doctor in the last 6 months? How many times do you have to experience wanting to go to the toilet but not being able to go to the toilet? Is that a good feeling? That's most definitely a bad feeling. It's a painful feeling. I've told you, my grandmother, the state that she's in today, you know, her life she spent looking at things, hearing things, tasting things, smelling things, just the same as all of us. But today, she goes to the toilet on the bed that she's on, and she has to wait for someone to come and clean her up. You go and ask her, would you like to, if I reset your life right now, would you like to live the same life again? If I asked her that question, do you think she's going to say yes? Well, ask yourselves that same question. If your lives were reset right now, all the times that you had to, that you got mumps, you got measles, chickenpox, headaches, fevers, all these things that you had to endure because of this body that you have now got yourself. The reason that you got yourself this body was because you have to sustain, you have to maintain the senses with which you enjoy the world. So the things that you attached were the things that you desired. The things that you desired, you wanted to acquire. But in doing so, and for you to be able to do so, you have got yourself the body. But today, don't you all suffer because of the body that you have? Why did you have to change the posture that you were sat in from the moment you came in here? Because you feel pain. But why were you born? Because of your attachment to sights. Because of your attachment to the sounds, to the taste, rupa vedana, sanya sankara vinyan, or rupa shabda gandha rasa sparsha. Either way, through rupa shabda gandha rasa sparsha, what you take in are the five aggregates, rupa vedana, sanya sankara vinyan. We'll talk about this in more detail in a future sermon. To help you understand exactly how these things work, how when you look at a sight, rupa vedana, sanya sankara vinyan arises in you, and how it leads you astray like a stray dog, and how when your mind orders you to do this, that and the other, just like a dog, you just go do whatever your mind asks you to do. You're a slave. We're all slaves. Like I said, you know, we think slavery happened in Africa. Really? Slavery happens at home. Where home? This thing that you call home. You're all slaves to your mind. So all the suffering that you have to endure today is because of the karmas that you did. These are all vipakas. The results of the deeds that you did is what gave you this birth. This body is a vipaka of the karmas that you did. So the reason you did that karma was because of what? Desire. Desire to acquire. You went and did the karmas, the vachi karma, kaya karma, mano karma. And every time you did karma, looking at paticchasamuppada, avidya paccaya sankara, sankara paccaya vinyana, vinyana paccaya namarupa, namarupa paccaya salayatana, salayatana paccaya sparsa, sparsa paccaya vedana, vedana paccaya tanha. Tanha is what? Desire. Tanha paccaya upadana, upadana paccaya bhava, becoming. Bhavapachya jati, birth. So what is it that brought you this birth after all? Is it not desire? Are you having fun right now with what you got yourself? Today you can walk with your own 2 feet. Today you can walk with your 2 legs. Before long you'll need a 3rd leg. That's what you call a walking stick. Today you can look with your eyes, but before long you'll need 4. Some of you already have 4. Indeed. Desire is always what leads you this way. So, positive basket or negative basket? The pains and the suffering that you have to endure because of the vipakas that you're suffering today? Negative. So what's the score now then? 6-1. I think it was 3 days ago, we were on our way to a sermon, and this gentleman who was with me, he was on Facebook, and he showed me a video, and if you're, well, I can't necessarily say fortunate enough, but you know, these things are good for you to get thinking, to put your thinking hats on, these things are useful. It happened in Sri Lanka. Not very long ago, because it's the rainy season now. So the reason again I'm sharing this with you is for 2 things. One, be careful where you are and about your whereabouts. Be mindful, because otherwise you don't know what could happen the next moment. And 2, you can tell me what's the culprit? Who the culprit is? Who's got to be responsible for what happens here? So here's what I saw. This is in a village in Sri Lanka, and you could tell it was Sri Lanka because the people in there were speaking in Sinhalese, all of them. It was a rural village somewhere, and in a home setting, there was a mother who was in the kitchen, and her 3 kids, probably about the age of these young children here. So there was a girl and 2 boys, or a sister and 2 brothers. And they were playing in the backyard. They were running around a tree. This is a big tree, a green big tree. So it was you couldn't easily set fire to that tree, let's just put it that way, because it's a good green, well built tree. Now, because it's a rainy season, the rains had just ceased, and there was a strike of lightning. This strike of lightning, or this strike of lightning was so strong, so fierce, that as soon as it hit the tree, and you could see in this video, the tree was ablaze. All of it was on fire. In that flash of a second, the tree was on fire. A massive green tree on fire, just after rain. So you can think, you know, how soon that tree would have had to dry up to have caught fire. Well, unfortunately, the 3 kids were playing, running around this tree. The strike of lightning was so strong that some of it, and the fire that it caused on the, you know, when the tree went ablaze, some of that lightning hit the kids as well. And if that tree was on fire, well, you can imagine what the kids were like. They were on the ground in a flash of a second. They were on the ground. They were not moving. They were still, like barks that had fallen from the tree. The mother heard this noise of the lightning strike, and she could hear the kids playing in the backyard. You know, they were screaming, they were shouting, they were having fun, and she could hear that noise. All of a sudden it went soundless. There was no noise coming from the backyard, which was followed immediately after the lightning strike. So she comes running, wiping her hands, because she was obviously working in the kitchen, on her dress. She comes out and she sees her son, her 2 sons and her daughter, at the bottom of this tree. She went speechless. Here's a mother who finds it difficult to take words out of her mouth. She can't speak. She's gone dumbfound. She approaches her kids and she says, "Putta, putta, Megitin, son, wake up. Get up, get up." But she gets no response. She tries to touch the son. As soon as she tries to touch the son, she pulls her arm away. Why is that? Because their bodies are too hot to touch. And then she tries to, again, she puts her arm out and tries to touch them again. And then again she pulls her arm back. They are so hot that she can't even touch her children. Parents, I want you to think, if you had asked that mother, "Do you think something like this could happen to your children?" 5 minutes before that incident, what do you think she would have said? "No, that's not going to happen to my kids. They're playing happily in the backyard. Look at them. They're having fun. You know, this is what desire brought me. I like children. I wanted children. I desired children. And see how happy I am right now." That mother couldn't even touch her children. She wanted to pick them up and carry them. And yet she couldn't. And then soon there were some villagers who had heard the noise, and they had seen that there was this lightning happen in this home. And they came running. And then soon they brought some buckets of water. And then as they poured the water on top of these bodies, you could see smoke coming out of the bodies. That was how hot these bodies were. And after the mother had, after they had cooled these bodies down by pouring water on top of them, they turned the bodies around and you could just see bones on them. The flesh had evaporated. The skin, there was no skin to be seen. Just bones. And wherever there was skin, wherever there was some muscle, it was all like roasted meat. That mother stood there watching for just 1 second. And then immediately after that, she was on the ground. She fainted. They sprinkled water on her face and she came back to her consciousness. Looked at her children again and she faints again. They sprinkled water on her face again. And then now, she starts hitting the ground, not being able to bear this pain. She starts tearing all her clothes. What has happened to my children? Pute katha karannako. Son, please speak, please say something. She still can't process the fact that her kids are dead. She's lost her mind. Who's responsible for this? Is it not desire? Is it not attachment that is responsible for this mother's suffering right now? Now, as I said, you go and ask that mother 5 minutes before that incident happened, do you think this is ever going to happen to your children? And she says what? Yes or no? She says no. So parents, I'll ask you all a rhetoric question. Is this going to happen to your children? Exactly. Are you prepared for it? When you on your way home, do you think, are you sure you're going to get back home today? Haven't you seen car accidents, car crashes? Cars, if they have been plastered to the other car, that is nothing more than a sheet of metal. And then immediately afterwards, he showed me another video. I think this happened in Sri Lanka a few years ago. A mother and a daughter. I think the mother was about 50 and the daughter in her late 20s. They were crossing the road. A motorcycle comes and it hits the mother. And the motorcycle drives away. But in this accident, the mother is beheaded. Her head comes off at the neck. This daughter, she can't compute this. She can't make sense of all this. She starts yelling, she starts screaming. And she picks up the mother's head in the middle of the street. And she starts walking around, asking other people, "Please come and wake my mother up. This is my mother. Please wake her up. Why won't she speak to me? She's got her mother's head in her arms, in her hands. And she says, why doesn't someone come and kill me right now? She tries to go and jump into the traffic because she doesn't want to be alive any longer, because she can't tolerate this pain right now. Who's responsible for this? The thing is this, throughout our lives we've done things to, you know, we've all acquired things. We've built families, we've built houses, bought cars, have had kids. You know, we can't reverse any of this. And I'm not saying that's what we should be doing anyway, even if you could. That's not the answer here. This is why Shastran Mahanse says, Tanhai Jayati Soko. Tanhai Jayati Bhayam. It's attachment, it's desire that's responsible for suffering. On our journey that we took, finding the truth, looking for the truth in life. Up until now, if you know any of you thought, well, actually it was it's desire that brings us happiness. What's the score right now, guys? 6-1, right? Well, why don't you tally up the scores and come to your own conclusion? And you know the backstory behind the one as well. If you ask me, it's 7-0. But hey, you put the one in there, so I'll let you all keep it. Now, if you're still saying happiness can only be sought through desire, well, you can see the scores for yourself. It's 6-1. Or 7-0, however you look at it. Who's won this battle? Mara's won this battle. And we've all lost. 7 to Mara, 0 to us. Tathagatan Mahanse comes along to this world and says, stop doing this. You're all gone mad. You're all gone crazy. You think the path to happiness is through desire? You think the path to happiness is through attachment? Well, look where it ended us. You see, this is where Buddhist philosophy is different to most other teachings. Because the Tathagatan Mahanse says, when he attained Buddhahood under the Bodhi tree, I have seen something, I have understood something that no one has ever seen before me. I have understood the Dhamma, I have understood the truth about this world that I have never been able to see before. You know, if your mother dies, you don't need to be a Buddhist to know that that's going to cause you suffering. Everyone knows that. You ask a Catholic or a Christian, you know, when your mother dies, does that bring you happiness or suffering? Well, what do you think they're going to say? Suffering indeed. You don't need to be a Buddhist, you don't need to even know that there was a Buddha to understand that. So that's not the truth that the Buddha came into this world to teach us. Suffering is always suffering. There's no question about that. If someone comes and slaps you in the face, you don't need the Buddha to tell you that that causes you suffering. Everybody knows that. That's obvious. But there is something that is not obvious until the Buddha comes along and teaches us. That is the suffering that is hidden under all these layers of happiness. This universe, this galaxy of suffering that's hidden under all these superficial layers of happiness. That superficial layer of happiness that hides the underlying suffering. If I all gave you a poisoned mango, what do you think you should be scared of? The mango or the poison? The mango. If there was a bottle labeled poison, would you ever pick it up and drink it? No, so why do you need to be scared of the poison? What do you think you should be scared of? The mango. Because it's the mango that's poisoned. When there's a fisherman that's gone fishing, and it's got a bait at the end of the hook, what do you think the fish needs to be scared of? The bait or the hook? It's the bait, children. Because it's the bait that he falls for. If he sees just the hook, he's not going to go bite the hook. But he goes after the bait. As soon as you bite the, as soon as you take in the bait, now that's it. If you ever see a trap that's been laid out for a rat, what do you think the rat should be scared of? The cheese or the trap? The cheese. See, now you're getting the hang of it. This is what the Buddha comes and teaches us. Don't just take things at the superficial layer. This is why he says vidarshana karan. What is vidarshana? It's that analytical knowledge. It's to scrape the surface. Don't fall for what you see on the surface. Look underneath. Lift the bonnet. Look underneath. Look what's underneath. When you go to buy a car, when was the last time you didn't look under the bonnet to see whether that shine on the bonnet was all what the car was about? No, you never did that. You lifted the bonnet. Because you know it's only if you look under the bonnet you can really tell what state this car's in, right? It's only if you take this for a test drive can you tell whether how good this car is. It's only if you look under the cushions you know how well the owners looked after this. It's only if you lift the carpets to see how much wear there is in the carpet can you tell how much this user has used this carpet, has used the car. So you never took things at the superficial layer. Well, certainly not in buying things like that. But what about life? And in your pursuit of happiness? Haven't you just let Mara fool you? This is Mara's trick. There's a question. Who is Mara? This is Mara's trick. Mara fools you with the sensual delights, with the sensual pleasures. With rupa, shabda, gandha, rasa, sparsha. He intoxicates you. And when you're intoxicated, you don't then go to look under, you don't go to look underneath, you don't stop to analyze, you don't wait to lift the bonnet and see actually what's lying underneath. You take it at face value. And that's where you bite the bait. Once you've bitten the bait, then starts suffering. 7-0. You work out the math. You've proved it to yourself. I don't need to prove it to you anymore. Now think about from experiences in your life. Every time your eyes shed a tear, was it not because of something that you desired? Was it not because of losing something that you were attached to? You never cried because of losing something you didn't like. You never cried because of not receiving something that you didn't want. You always cried because you didn't get what you want, or what you didn't like came to you. Yam piccha nalabati tampi dukkha. Right? So it's that attachment, it's that desire that's responsible for the suffering every single time. And this is why, and I'm talking about mental suffering here, I'm not talking about physical discomforts and physical suffering. We've talked about the difference in the past, right? We've talked about this in the past. And you can again go back and listen to previous sermons. The Buddha comes into this world not to teach us how to relieve ourselves from physical discomfort. We all know that. We all know that we need to build ourselves a home to live in. We all know that we've got to farm to be able to get some crops that we can eat. Or at least hunt. We all know that. We all know that we need tools to make our lives easier. You don't need the Buddha to teach you that. But what we don't know is what is it that has been causing us this mental grief and this mental agony all our lives? Well, hey, presto, here's the answer. Desire. Tanhaya jayati soko. Tanhaya jayati bhayam. Didn't he get it right all along? Now who's won the game? Is it 40-1? Haven't we all lost? Haven't we all fallen into the camp of Mara? Isn't that why we call Tathagata and Mahansa Ananta Jina? What's Ananta? Infinite. Jina? Victory. The infinitely victorious one. That's who the Tathagata Nyanamsa is. Uncomparable, peerless, the perfect one. It's because of him we have this Dhamma today. It's because he took the effort to find this out for himself. He walked every path there was to walk, looking for the truth. He did everything there was to do. He left no stone unturned to find the truth. And having found that, what did he do? He dedicated his entire life to give us the truth. Sometimes he walked for miles on end, on foot, to relieve just one person from the shackles of samsara. Just one person. Didn't I promise you all last week, even if there's just one person here to listen to a sermon, I'll come all the way to come and preach? I gave you that promise last week. If my Tathagata Nyanamsa can do that, who am I to say I can't? I am nothing at his feet. I'm insignificant in this world compared to my Shastra Nyanamsa. Thanks to him, I'm free today. I'm liberated today. I have the path. I know exactly what I need to do to relieve myself from all this anxiety, all this pain, all this suffering. And this is why every day I encourage you to take one more step in the right direction. Like I said, put Nibbana to a side. Put becoming an Arahant to a side. Go looking for the truth. That's what the Bodhisattva did. And where did he end up? At Nirvana. Where did he end up? Becoming a Buddha. That's the result of the effort. That's where you reach. That's your destination. You don't have to know where you're going. As in, you don't need to label it. You don't need to label it Nibbana. You don't need to label it Arahantsu. Just walk looking for the truth. Guess where you're going to end? You're going to end at Nirvana. You're going to end at becoming an Arahant. At becoming an Arahant. So all your lives you've been working hard, you've been toiling. You've done everything there is to do to try and find, to try and be happy. But do you not feel at least a tinge of remorse in your hearts that all this time I've been trying to find happiness by walking down the wrong path? I've always been doing the wrong things trying to find happiness? When ultimately everything that I took hold of, everything that I attached myself to, everything that I was desirous of only left me with grief? Do you see the error in the formula now? Do you not see that if you continue to do this, if you continue to find happiness in desiring more and more and more, if you continue to find happiness in trying to build and acquire and make more than what you have? By the way, I'm not saying you've got to be lazy and sit on your backsides all day. That's not what I'm saying. You have to work hard. There's no free lunch. You have to work hard, absolutely. There's no question about that. Kids, when you go to school, you have to do your homework. You have to work hard in your classroom. There's no question about that. You've got to do all the things that your teachers tell you. All the things that your parents tell you. Oh, you've got to do all of that. There's no question about that. At your workplace, you've got to be the best you can be. There's no question about that. But this is not a question about how hard you work, how diligent you are. This is a question about where do you find happiness in your life? And how you've always been applying the wrong formula to find happiness. You wanted the total of two numbers, you've always been subtracting one number from the other. How are you going to get to the total? You've got to add them up. So who is Mara? Is it our Raga Dvesha Moha? The Mara that we are all battling with is the Raga Dvesha Moha that we have in our minds. These are the cankers, these are the defilements that we have to battle with. Yes, there is a Vasavatthi Mara. There is a Mara that battled with the Buddha, that tried to stop him from reaching Buddhahood. there is that Mara as well. And he lives in this in the heavenly world called Paranimmada Vasavarti. You see, Mara's logic is this. He lives in this heavenly world called Paranimmita Vasavarti. It's called Paranimmita Vasavarti because the nature of that heavenly world is whatever you desire, you get in, at that point, at that moment in time. Paranimmita. Someone else comes and creates it for you. As in beings in the heavenly worlds that are below Paranimmita Vasavarti create this for the enjoyment and the pleasure of the heavenly gods in the Paranimitta Vasavati world. Para is what? Others. Nimitta, Nirmane Karma, is to create. So, if you ask him, why does anyone need to attend Nirvana? Where whatever you desire, whatever you want is right in front of you. All you have to do is just think about it and wish for it. And it's like Aladdin rubbing the lamp. And you have a genie that creates it for you. So why attend Nibbana? Well, the thing is, he also suffers from ignorance. He suffers from dukkha ajnanam, dukkha samudaya ajnanam, dukkha nirodha ajnanam, dukkha nirodha gamini patipadaya ajnanam, ayam ucchati avaso. Dukkha. I am to say also avidya. This is what ignorance is. So he suffers from ignorance. He doesn't realize that it's the things that you are desirous of that brings you unhappiness. Well, you see, one could argue, well then why don't we all go to Paranimitta Vasavarti? Well, the problem is, life there is numbered. It's like when you have money in your bank account, one can think, well, why should I work? You know, sometimes children of rich parents or kids of rich parents often question, you know, why do we have to work hard? All our lives we've had everything we want. I've got anything I want. A computer, my dad can bring me 10 of them. I've got plenty of money. I've got wealth. I've got properties. So why do I have to work hard? People keep on saying, you've got to work hard. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Well, I get a free lunch every day. What do you mean there's no free lunch? Well, it's all there until it all expires. Until it's all used up. That's like the merit, pina. It's like money in your bank account. What happens when you've exhausted the money in your bank account? Who's there to look after you then? But even if you do have money in your bank account, even if you do have merit, is it not, again, look at your own lives. You may have enough money to go and buy whatever it is that you desire. Right? But still, as soon as you... let me give you a really simple example. If you, as parents, are still young, as parents, you may still be able to make more children. If you have two kids, you may be able to make a third. Does that stop you from suffering when one of your kids die? Oh well, we can make another. When have you heard parents say that? No. So just because you have the resources to acquire more doesn't mean you have ended suffering. Because as long as you are desirous of something, as long as you are attached to something, that's going to make you suffer. Right? And the same applies for anything. Of course, there are little things, you know, like, let's say there's a phone, and you have a phone, and you think, well, I've got plenty of money, I could buy 100,000 phones. Well, the reason then that you don't suffer as much when your phone breaks to when your kid dies is because that's the degree of attachment that you have. The more attached you are, the more desirous you are, it's directly proportional to the amount of suffering that you're going to have to endure. So suffering on one axis, desire on the other, it's a straight graph. The more you're attached, the more you desire, the more you suffer. So your phone might be something somewhere over here where zero meets zero on that axis. But, you know, give that phone to your child. Now that's their most priceless possession. You don't cry when your phone breaks, but your child, he's going to cry. Why? Because all of a sudden he's now found the thing that he attaches himself to the most. So, while there is a Vasavattimara, don't worry yourself about Vasamattimara. That's the least of your problems. Vasamattimara has no issue with you guys. He has no issue with me. He doesn't come to have a fight with me because his battles are with Samma Sambuddhas. He doesn't deal with pesky little beings like you and me. He deals with Samma Sambuddhas. So because we are all not Bodhisattvas trying to be Samma Sambuddhas, let's all not worry about Vasavattimara. He's going to mind his own business. So if someone says, oh, you know, these days Vasavattimara is coming to battle with me, he troubles me all the time. Yeah, you wish. The Mara that we have to battle with is Raga, Dvesha, Moha. This is called Klesha Mara. The Mara that are the cankers, the defilements in your mind. Isn't that the Mara that has been causing you suffering all this time? When did you ever open your door to find Mara standing in front and saying, hey you, I'm going to take all your kids? Did Mara ever come and say that to you? Or did Mara say, give me all your money and hold you at gunpoint? No. You see, the thing is, you can't destroy Vasavattimara. For as long as he has the merits to live in the Paranimitta Vasavati world, he's going to be there. What happens to him afterwards, I don't even want to think about. Because he went and had a... You know, he chose to pick the wrong battle with the Bodhisattva when he wanted to become a Buddha. So I don't even want to think about where he's going to go after he's done his time in Paranimitta Vasavati. So let's forget about him. He can sort out his own problems. We've got our own problems to worry about. And that's the Kleshamara problems. Raga, Dvesha, Moha. Raga, Dvesha, Moha is what has been causing you suffering all this time, all along, right? Nobody else. It's not the person next door. It's not your wife that causes you to suffer. You cause yourself to suffer. It's not your husband's shouting that makes you annoyed. The seed of annoyment is inside of you. Anger still resides inside of you. That's where the problem is, not the outside world. So please stop trying to change the outside world, because that's not where the problem is. If there's a fire here, you don't try to put out the fire over here. The fire's over there. That's not going to do you any good. You could throw all the water you like at it. You could throw all the sand you like at it. That's not going to put out the fire over there. That's where the fire is. Put out the fire inside your hearts. Put out the fires inside your minds. And these fires are the fires of Raga, Dvesha and Moha. So, the other question was, what to do when you get too much stress? Well, it doesn't matter whether you get too much stress or little stress. Stress is always the result of what? Desire. So what do you have to do then? See the truth, right? When did you last go and touch your cooker, knowing fully well that it's hot? That it would burn, it would scald your hands as soon as you touch it. When did you ever go and touch the cooker? Did you? No, you didn't. When did you ever go and put your hand in a mouse trap, knowing fully well that it was set up? Would you ever go and touch a bomb, knowing fully well that it's going to go off any second? No, you would run the hell away from it. So when you know that something is responsible for your suffering, you don't go towards it, you go away from it. So why have you been going towards desire all this time? Not knowing that desire is what's responsible for your suffering. It's because of ignorance that you've been going after or treading this path of happiness with the door that has a label on it that's called what? Truth. But in inverted commas. But now you know. Now that you know, it's time to pick the right door. Alice, it's time to pick the right door. One's going to take you to Wonderland. the other is going to take you to pain land. You decide where you want to go. I've got one last thing to say. If you know right from wrong, if you know the truth, and you still choose to walk, to go through the wrong door, I have no problem with that. You're free to do that. If you know right from wrong, if you know the truth, and you still choose to open the wrong door, I have no problem with that. But if you don't know right from wrong, if you don't know the right door from the wrong door, if you don't know truth from truth, I have a problem with that. Because I'm responsible for that. I'm responsible for you not knowing right from wrong. Why do you offer me arms? Why did you offer me these robes? To help you figure out right from wrong, right? To help you understand the Buddha's teaching. This is why you invite me and you organize all this, you take all this trouble to ask us to come here. You give me arms, you feed me, you clothe me, you give me shelter, you give me medication when I'm sick. My parents don't do that anymore. I don't work for it anymore. You are my parents now. And this is why when I worship the Buddha three times before I sit here, my first veneration is to the unparalleled one for his infinite wisdom. That is what my first veneration is. The second veneration is seeking his permission to preach his Dhamma. None of this is mine. I never came up with the teaching that suffering is caused by attachment. I don't have that much wisdom, but he does. So he taught it, and today I'm his student. And so I have his permission to talk to you about this. And thirdly, I make a firm resolve, a firm determination, that may you all, my parents, my mothers and my fathers, be able to understand this Dhamma. I wish for you and I pray for you. May you all find the true happiness that you look for in life. And that is why, even if there's just one person here, I will come whatever distance I have to come and preach to you. That is a promise. That's a solemn promise. So if you don't know right from wrong, I am responsible. If your children don't know right from wrong, who's responsible? Parents. But if children know right from wrong and they still make the wrong choice, now who's responsible? Now the kids are responsible. But if you don't know right from wrong, I can't go to bed at night and close my eyes and go to sleep peacefully, knowing that I haven't done what I'm supposed to do. Knowing that I haven't done what my Tathagata and Mahansa taught me to do. Charata bhikkave charikam bahujana hitaya bahujana sukaya. Monks, go forth. Do good for the most. Preach so that most may benefit. For the benefit of the most, go do your service. In fact, when you become a samanera, if you have ever gone through the Pirit book, you'll see there's one called the Dasa. What's it called? Devanihambita. Well, open the Pirit books in today, and you can see in there. It comes after the. I think it'll be either the second or the third discourse given by the Buddha. In there, there's one that is a commandment from the Buddha to his monks. Parapati baddha me jivikati pabbajitena abhinam pachavikitabhang. Monks, this is my commandment to you. Dedicate your life for the benefit of others. And when my master has given me that commandment, and when he has shown me the way, when the happiness that I enjoy today is thanks to him, when I know I am nothing at his feet, this is now the purpose of my life. finding and traversing the path of happiness that I have found and opening the doors up to as many people as I can. So make use of that. Make use of these sermons. I'll leave you with one last thing, which is something I try and remind you every sermon we have. When you leave here, please don't let this be just another sermon. Please don't let this be just another lecture that you listen to, a couple of hours you spent on a Sunday afternoon. Make use of what you've learned. If you've learned something that is true to you, apply it into your lives. On your way home, question yourself. Why did I suffer all the times that I've suffered in my life? Is it not because of desire? You've done the math now. You've proven to yourself that it's desire that has caused me suffering every single time. And as I said, as a layperson, you can't let go of your kids right now. You'll have to wait. You know, even if you do decide to become monks or nuns at some point, you'll have responsibilities and duties you need to fulfill. Whether that's to your parents, to your relations, to your brothers, your sisters, your kids, right? You can't just let go of them. And even if you're at work, just going AWOL is not the answer. Someone's going to have to pick up the dirt. That's not the answer. As an Arya, something that you all have to be mindful of is to be aware of your duties and responsibilities. So don't insult the Buddha by trying to give up everything just overnight and coming over to become a monk and say, I want to become a monk. And the first thing we're going to ask you is, who are you responsible for? Parents? Children? Oh, let them worry about themselves. No, we will not accept you. Because you do not have the qualities to become a monk in the Buddha Shasana. Where is Parapatibaddha me jivikati pabbajite nabinna? Where have you shown examples of how you dedicated yourself for the benefit of others? That's the first thing you have to do. So where, if you have children, if you have parents that need looking after, make sure there are means, make sure there are resources to support them. At least for a little while. And so, you know, when they come and say, you know, Puta, don't worry. From this point forward, we can look after ourselves. You know, go forth. Find the happiness that you are looking for in life. True, this may be the last time you'll be born human again. This may be the last time you're born human if you don't become a Sotapanna. That may be the case. But all the duties and responsibilities, no one forced you to take it upon yourself. You chose to pick them up. You chose to get married. You chose to have kids. You chose to go and do a job. And so did I. And so therefore, when I came forth to become a monk, I made sure that none of those people, no one, was left hanging. All my duties and responsibilities were fulfilled. So if any of you have any thoughts in that arena, make sure that your duties and responsibilities are fulfilled. Children will particularly have to get their parents' permission, because I know previously one child came and spoke with me at the end of a sermon. And this is why I'm telling this to you in general and openly. Children will absolutely have to seek their parents' permission. We're not going to ordain anyone without parents' permission. That is against the Buddha's teaching. I'm not prepared to do anything that the Buddha said do not do. I've done enough of those things. That's why I'm in this. That's why I have to suffer what I have to today. Everything that he said don't do, I went and did. And this is why I'm suffering today. So I'm not prepared to do anything that he said don't do. And wives, the same. Husbands, the same. Make sure you fulfill your responsibilities first. And please, make sure whatever you've learned today, you practice in your lives. Next week should all be about applying what you've learned in your laboratories. Your home is your lab, your workplace is your lab, your car is your lab, your commute to work on the train or the bus is your lab. Look around. It's not about closing your eyes and ears and saying, I don't want sights, I don't want sounds, I don't want tastes. That's not what Buddhist teaching is about. Open your eyes and ears and observe. Observe and analyze and understand. Look for the truth and you'll find it. All happy to do that? Okay. Right, I think we'll conclude the sermon there then. Before we conclude, let us all take a moment to once again reflect on the fact that it is because of the
incomprehensible, uncomparable, peerless wisdom of the Lord Buddha that we have this Dhamma today. It is thanks to him we have found the path to liberation and the path to finding the supreme bliss of Nibbana. And also, let us all take a moment to transfer the merits that we have all acquired today, particularly to the Bhikkhu Bhikkhunis, Upasakas and Upasikas, who from time immemorial have preserved the Buddha's teaching by preserving the Tripitaka and by bringing it down to us, passing it down to us, by learning it by heart and also by preserving the three canons. And sometimes in the face of adversities they have protected it by sacrificing their lives, and it is thanks to them therefore that we have the Dhamma today to release ourselves from the shackles of samsara. So may they all, wherever they may be born, be able to rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. If they have been born in the woeful plane, may they be able to release themselves from there and be born in the blissful plane, and may they all be able to understand this, the Four Noble Truths, and having done so, be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And also, may the most venerable monks who have attended today's sermon, as well as the chief incumbent monk of the Sri Alan Madhini Arame, the most venerable Uduve Dhamma Loka Nayaka Swami Mahansa, as well as the other incumbent monks of this temple, rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. May those merits help them all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana in this earth itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And also, may all the devas, the Brahma spirits, demons and the dead, as well as all our past and distant relations who we invited before the start of this sermon, be able to rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. May these merits help them all relieve themselves from the shackles of samsara. May they be able to understand and realize this, the enlightenment that we speak of, the enlightenment that the Buddha revealed to us by understanding the Four Noble Truths, and may they all be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And also anyone and everyone that helped make this event a success by organizing this, this event, this venue, as well as the technology and the facilities that we have and we are able to make use of today, anyone and everyone that made that possible, may they all rejoice in these merits. And anyone that is responsible for making this technology available to us, including the internet as well as other IT equipment, anyone that we may know by name or by person, as well as those that we don't, anyone and everyone that contributed in whichever way or form, may they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, just like in the era when the Lord Buddha was around, and like when the most venerable Sariputta and when the most venerable Moggallana were around, the great elders who shone light on all of us, when they were around, there were many arahants who freely roamed this land that we all live in today. May all the merits that we have all acquired today give us the power and the energy for all of us to become arahants, and therefore once again enrich this land with arahants, just like in the day of the Samma Sambuddha and just like in the day of Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Moggallana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may all the merits that we have all acquired in preaching this sermon and also in listening to this sermon, and everyone who has contributed to making this event a success, all rejoice in these merits, and may these merits help us all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May you all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sivadana Nirvansarama.